Namaste! Today we are talking about time, the real wheel of time. There is a very popular author, I love his books, and he's written books on Wheel of Time, and there's a very popular television series that's come on Amazon, and which is very popular as well. And he's used the ancient teachings, the ancient Eastern teachings about time being a chakra. A chakra means a wheel. Did you know that it is true according to more than one ancient religions? So in Sanatan Dharma or Vedic teachings, we call the wheel of time Kala Chakra. The presiding deity is Mahakala, and he has these people working for him like Kala Devas or presiders of time. And Mahakala is a form of Shiva, one of the Trinity. So we have our Vedic expert here with us, Atul, Pandit Atul Krishnadas. Welcome, Atul.
Thank you. Namaste, Manjulali.
Yeah, we were talking earlier and I had asked you about time referred to as a wheel. And you had talked about why time is a chakra, why it is a wheel, why it is a cycle. Can you tell me a little bit about that now?
Certainly. Time is referred to as a wheel, and it's a wheel that's always turning. Sometimes it's referred to as a wheel that has 365 spokes representing the days of the year. And it represents cycles. We also have cycles of time within cycles. For example, in a year, you have four seasons: winter, summer, fall, autumn. And in some cultures, you have six seasons, but it's a cycle. It happens again and again. Even within our life, we have cycles. We're born, we grow as children, we become youths, we become young people, we become middle-aged, we become old, and we finally die. But in the Vedic perspective, death is not the end. It's simply a time to be basically recycled and to come again into the wheel of what we also refer to as karma or activity.
Yeah, and we were talking about how the cells in the body change every 7 years or so. So in Bhagavad Gita, where's that verse? What is it? Dehinosmin.
Dehinosmin yatha dehe komaram yavanam jara. Tata dehantara praptir dhiras tatra na mohyati.
Yes.
Sri Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, that just as in this life, we have gone from being a small baby to being a small child to being a young person and to being an adult, at the time of death, the Atma is also going to pass to another body, but is still going to be the same person. So if you think about it, think about when you were a child. You can remember things about when you were a child. You were the same person. You didn't know everything you do now. You didn't have all the experiences you do now, but you were the same person. Your body has changed completely. All the cells in your body have changed, but you are the same person. And who is the you? It is the Atma.
Recently in the summer, there was the very, very famous movie, and there was a big viral thing about Oppenheimer and Bhagavad Gita verse going on because he quoted the Bhagavad Gita during the time. Do you know anything about that?
Sure. Well, Oppenheimer, like many scientists, he was a very intelligent person. He was also thoughtful and philosophical. And he certainly had mixed feelings about working on a weapon of mass destruction. And like other scientists, especially Einstein, had some regrets. But he thought of this quote from Bhagavad Gita, "Kalosmi, time I am, the destroyer of worlds." When he witnessed the furious destructive power of the atom bomb, And it was actually very appropriate because time is the ultimate destructive power. And when Krishna is giving this quote, he's emphasizing that I am not only the creator and the maintainer, I am also the destroyer. And there is nobody who gets past that destructive force of time.
So, you know, somebody who's listening may ask, why would a religious holy book, I mean, Bhagavad Gita is our version of the Bible. It is our holy book. We swear by it. Why would God say I am a destroyer?
Because this world is actually unnatural for us. Who we are, as we said before, we are the Atma. We are not the body. And the body is temporary. That doesn't mean that it's bad. In fact, we say that the body is a gift from God. It's something that is meant to be used for good purposes. So we revere the lives of others. We don't believe in taking lives unnecessarily. And we want always to do things that are beneficial for others.
And I mean, if you think about the other side of the, whenever something is destroyed, it is recreated, it's reborn. And the whole wheel of time means anything that is destroyed, it comes back. It's Kala Chakra. So if it does not get destroyed, how will it come back?
Yeah, that's true. And there's another verse in the Gita where Krishna says, for everyone who has been born, death is certain. And for everyone who dies, birth is certain.
And this just doesn't apply to, you know, just humans. It applies to all entities, all organic matter. It applies to entities, aliens living in other planets, downward, upward. Everybody is subject to wheel of time. Even the creator Brahma is subject to wheel of time. Is that correct?
Absolutely. According to the Vedas, Brahma lives for a lifetime which is about 4 quadrillion years. And creation goes in cycles as well. There is a cycle of yugas, and
so let's talk about the wheel of time. Time goes in a linear direction from when we are born and then we grow old. For us, even in physics, if I'm not mistaken, it goes linear, it goes straight. But according to the theory of Kala, time, in the Sanatan Dharma, in Vedic sciences and arts, time is not linear, it is circular. And if time goes in a circle, means everything comes back. Even the time that you live in comes back. It doesn't mean you're going back in time, but it comes back. And the time that we are living in now, the cyclic portion of the time we are living in now is called Kali Yuga. So the circular time is divided into 4 portions. Each portion is called Yuga. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. The Yuga cycles are described in Vedic literatures. There is Satya Yuga, which is the age of full righteousness and enlightenment. And that lasts the longest, about 1.7 million years. And then there's Treta Yuga, which lasts 1.2 million years, where the self-realization is reduced by 1/4. And then there is Dwapara Yuga, which lasts about 864,000 years. And then we are finally 5,000 years into the Kali Yuga. And that is the age of technology, quarrel, and hypocrisy. And it lasts 432,000 years. So 427,000 years to go in Kali Yuga.
Wow. And what happens when the Kali Yuga, this time that we are in, ends? What happens at the end of the wheel?
Then there's a reset. It's kind of a partial devastation. Things get restarted and the earth gets reseeded with enlightened individuals.
Is there some apocalypse, some destruction between the resets?
Absolutely. There are many different types of destruction, or using the Sanskrit word, pralaya. Pralaya usually has the form of floods and fire. There are some devastations that involve flooding and some that also involve fire.
Beautiful. So you're saying that the time that goes circular, and there, you know, there is Satyuga where people are all related to divine, they live long lives, they're peaceful, they're happy, and then every subsequent yuga, their lifespan becomes less, and so on. And you're going back in time millions and billions of years ago. So does the Vedic religion believe that Earth is a million years or billion years, or creation is not just 6,000 years like in other Abrahamic religions? What is the Vedic point of view on creation of the universe?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I would have to say that time is divided into cycles, and there are great cycles and lesser cycles. One of the great cycles is what is called the day of Brahma. Brahma is the aspect of the divine who's the creator. His day lasts for 4 billion years. And he also has a night, which also lasts 4 billion years.
Whoa.
And Brahma lives for 100 years of those days, which is about 4 quadrillion years. So it's a very, very long cycle, and there are many, many devastations and creations. There's a creation at the beginning of each day of Brahma. There's a devastation and a subsequent rest during the night of Brahma.
So basically, the creator, Brahma, you know, he goes to bed and everything's destroyed. Everybody's, you know, all the creations are destroyed. And he wakes up in the morning and he just, you know, starts his morning routine. You know, he just creates universes.
Yes, well, Brahmaji operates on a completely different time cycle from us, a different scale of time, as you might imagine. If your 100 years is equal to 4 quadrillion of our years, there's a difference in scope of intellect and vastness of time that just kind of dwarfs our little tiny ant-like perspective on life.
So Brahmaji is the top deva, the top living entity. What about the devas or higher entities, angels, devas that are between the middle earth, the middle planet, we are, you know, the middle out of the 14, we are number 7, and the 6 above us, the heavenly planets, Swarga, Tapo, Satyalok, and so on. What is happening in time cycle in these planets, and what about the time cycle in the lower nether region as well?
Well, that is another interesting question, because the day of Brahma is divided into 14 sub-periods called Manvantaras. Mm-hmm. And each one of those is ruled by a different Indra. Indra is the king of heaven, somewhat the equivalent of Zeus in Greek mythology.
So Indra is a post, you're saying?
Indra is a post, yes. And someone who is very highly qualified is appointed to that post of Indra. It is an administrative position.
What about the other, you know, Panchamahabhutas, the 5 elements, air, fire, water, earth, these other, are they also a post? I know Earth is a goddess, you know, in other cultures she's called Gaia. So she, we know. What about these other minor Panchamahabhuta deities?
Well, Panchamahabhutas are kind of a special case in that they are ruled by Shaktis, because they have such an unlimited scope. They are transformations of Prakriti. Prakriti is the material energy of God, and it's unlimited in scope. So the ruling devis of the Panchamahabhutas they are also expansions of Adi Shakti, or who is also manifest as Durga or Parvati.
So devis are basically these Shaktis, but these people, the devas, were supposed to be the deity of air or fire or water. They're male. You're saying they're Shakti, they're female.
They also have their Shakti counterparts. Indra is accompanied by Shachi or Indrani, and so on. They all have their Shakti counterparts. Most prominently, Shiva, who is actually the representative of Purush, is accompanied by Parvati, who is also called Adi Shakti Durga, and she is the original manifestation of the material energy of God.
Interestingly, one aspect of Shiva is called Mahakala, and he is supposed to be the presiding deity of, and he's just an aspect, he's not Shiva himself, but think of like an avatar, and he's called Mahakal. He's a big temple in India where they worship him as Mahakal, as the predominating deity of time and a wheel of time, which I find very interesting.
Well, Shiva is quite an interesting personality. He is literally in his own category. We say he is in the category of Shiva Tattva or Shambhu Tattva because he cannot be compared to anyone else. It is said that Shiva and Vishnu are not different and also not the same. And that is a topic really for another deep discussion.
We should have a podcast just for that because, you know, there's a natural little bit of a competition between the Vaishnavites and the Shaivites. But thank you so much, Atul, for talking to me. And hopefully everybody who's listening also enjoyed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.